Welcome to part two of the three-part series on butterflies and insect vision. We're talking with Professor Ron Rutowski in the School of Life Sciences at Arizona State University. Now, let's talk a bit about your research. Part of your research includes butterfly vision. I think one of the most interesting things when I got to talk to you about this was the common belief that insects see multiple images at the same time, kind of a kaleidoscope of the same image. Something that people have seen over and over in the movies, and most likely due to the way insect eyes look when you look at them with, say, a microscope or up close. They have this collection of what are called omatidium, and it's a bunch of little lenses or little eyes that are all clustered together. What people began to think, of course, is they have this large collection of a bunch of different images. But in reality, this isn't really true. Can you give us a clearer picture of insect vision?
I can certainly try. I mean, it's one of the really difficult things about this, Dr. Biology, is trying to figure out how the world looks to another organism. And, you know, butterflies can't talk, so we can't say to them, you know, well, what does it look like to you? And they can't give us any answer to that question. I mean, we can say it to them, but there's no responding. But at least verbally, but there are experiments, behaviorally experiments that we can do where we can probe the vision of insects and provide them with stimuli and see how they respond to them. And we can also study the structure of their eyes. And there are a lot of conclusions that we can draw about how they see the world from even looking at the structure of their eyes. And of course, we have to start with the observation that their eyes are very, very different in structure from ours. You know, we have a single lens that focuses light on a retina, a sheet basically at the back of our eye that's full of little individual photoreceptors called rods and cones. Butterflies, and it's almost like every rod and cone has its own little lens. And that is gathering light and shining it on that rod or cone. In fact, what you have is each lens in a butterfly or insect eye shines light on, oh, I don't know, about six or nine different cells, each of which gathers light at a different wavelength. The basic conclusion that comes from the studies of eye structure and also from the study of their behavior is that butterflies and most other insects don't see the world anywhere near as clearly as we do. So imagine this. Imagine I was standing 200 feet away from you, and I had this big E, and I put it out there, and I asked you, can you tell me what letter is this? And you said, it's an E. And so then I made it smaller. Now can you tell me what letter it is? And I kept making it smaller until you couldn't tell what it was. And then I made it a little bit bigger so that you could see at 200 feet. We knew what the smallest, or yeah, the how small the E could be, and you could still recognize what it was, what letter it was. If we then took that same size E and got a butterfly and started it at 200 feet and asked it, can you see that this is an E? They would say no. You then take the butterfly and you move it to 100 feet and ask it, can you see that this is an E now? And they would say, no. For that size E, the butterfly would have to be about 20 feet away before it could see that and recognize that it was an E. So that's what's referred to as 2200 feet. In other words, a butterfly can see, has to be 20 feet away to recognize an E. That's the size that a normal person could recognize at 200 feet. Using this scale that we use in people, 20/20 vision is perfect vision. Butterflies have about 20/200 vision, which according to legal definitions is legally blind. It doesn't mean that the butterflies can't see detail, but it just means that in order to be able to see it, they have to be pretty darn close. So, you know, as we look at butterfly coloration, we see the amazingly intricate color patterns, even like on the monarchs, the black veins on their wings. And it's not that the butterflies would never be able to see that. It's just that they would have to be just a few inches away in order to be able to see it. Since we're very interested in how males find females, we got real interested in the business, well, how far away can a female be from a male and the male still be able to see her, to distinguish her from the background, to even be able to detect her at all? And we designed some experiments where we flew little model devices, little model butterflies by males out in the field. And the results from the optical studies of the eyes, as well as the results of the behavioral studies, were pretty much the same. And they suggested that for this butterfly we were studying, which has a wingspan of about 2 inches from wingtip to wingtip, for a male to see a female of that size, she could fly no more than about 10 to 12 feet away from that male. So what this means is that for most species of butterflies, they're only even going to be able to detect one another at distances of maybe 10 or 15 feet. Smaller butterflies, it's worse. It's closer, not only because they're smaller, but because they have worse vision. Larger butterflies, they're larger, and they have better eyes, so they can see each other at distances of maybe 30 or 40 feet.
They actually are larger, too, so they can be
picked out. Oh, that's right. Yes. Yeah.
That's good. You also work in another area, and we know that color plays an important part in the life of a butterfly. But the color in the world of a butterfly is not the same as the color you and I see.
Right.
At least without being able to ask the butterfly,
yeah,
right?
That's right.
Could you talk a bit about butterfly colors, patterns, and the differences between what humans see and what butterflies see or we think they see?
What I just talked about was the business of what we call resolution. It's the, you know, if you have two objects, it's about the ability of the eye to, under difficult conditions of low light or great distances, to be able to recognize that those are two objects and not just one blurry object, you know. And that's one very important aspect of vision. Another very important aspect of vision is the ability of animals to discriminate objects of different colors. And, of course, we do this all the time. People say, don't eat green apples. Well, that's because green apples are often not ripe, and they contain strong chemicals that can make us, our stomach, you know, get uncomfortable and whatnot. So that's an example of one sort of discrimination that we make using color. You can have two objects there, exactly the same size and everything and shape, but if one's green and one's red, you're likely to pick the red apple. Similarly, I think of every time I open a container of Lifesavers. You know, there we're making, obviously, a whole bunch of color discriminations. I happen to like the red ones best. So if I see a green one or an orange one, I'm less inclined to eat it than if I see that one. So we make all these color discriminations. And, of course, with respect to butterflies, there are 14,000 species of butterflies. And we're very good at telling those apart because it can largely be done on the basis of our vision, our color, the color and the patterns of colors that they display. We can ask a couple of questions. One is, do butterflies see color? Can they discriminate colors? Can you give them, you can't ask them, but you could presumably give them a task in which you could put two flowers out and see one which is one color and one of which is another color, provide one with lots of nectar and the other not, and see if they can learn which one, if that a certain color is associated with nectar. And these sorts of experiments have been done and by people in Japan and also Sweden, and butterflies are pretty darn good at it. They can discriminate colors. As with other insects, we find out that they can discriminate colors across a broad range of colors, and that range actually extends into some colors or wavelengths of light that we cannot see. There's a quantitative scale that you can use for the color that we see. It goes red, orange, yellow, green, blue, indigo, violet, lined up like in a rainbow. That set of colors spans a set of wavelengths that goes from about, well, from 700 for the red down to about 400 nanometers, very, very small measure of distance, down to about 400 nanometers for the violet and the indigo. Well, the electromagnetic radiation that hits the Earth and exists in nature extends well beyond that range. If you go to wavelengths longer than 700, you go out of the red into what's known as the infrared. And those wavelengths are largely responsible for what we feel is heat. So most heaters, they glow red, and they're giving off a lot of infrared, which we feel is heat, sense as heat. At the other end, There are many wavelengths, electromagnetic radiation, which are much shorter than the short wavelengths that we see. We can see down to about 400 nanometers. If you go beyond that, at shorter wavelengths, you're getting into what's called the ultraviolet. And although we can't see ultraviolet, it turns out that insects can. This has been known for almost 100 years now, that insects are capable of seeing in the ultraviolet. There are, again, studies of the eyes that suggest this. We can electrodes into their eye and record what sorts of nervous signals we get out of the eye when we give them different wavelengths of light, and you give them ultraviolet wavelengths, and you get a lot of nerve signals coming out of the eye. That suggests they can. And then, of course, there are behavioral experiments that have been done. So butterflies can see many of the same wavelengths that we can see. In some cases, it's broader. In some butterflies, their visual sensitivities run all the way from the ultraviolet right down to the red. In others, they go from the ultraviolet to the yellow or orange or something like that. But virtually all butterflies can see in the UV. So what difference does this make? Well, it makes differences in a couple of ways. One is that many flowers have special ultraviolet patterns, reflect more or less ultraviolet light, which affects the way the butterflies respond to them. And also, since we've started looking, there's quite a bit of variation in butterflies in how much UV they reflect, and that there are elements of color pattern that are in the UV that we can't see. Special spots of UV reflection on a certain part of the wing that just looks all the same color to us. And they pay attention to that. They can see that.
You actually had an article published in Scientific American in July of 1998, mm-hmm. And it actually talks about this, and you actually have the cover from that.
Right, yeah, I was very pleased with that.
So it's nice that if someone wants to go to the library and look that up, you actually can see what you're talking about as well, that the pattern that you and I are looking at and the colors we're looking at very likely are not at all the same
right.
with the butterflies.
Yeah, there was a really neat thing that, unfortunately, on the newsstand version, it didn't have it, but on the if you subscribe to Scientific American, they had this butterfly on the cover, and I'm trying to remember. I think it was all one color, but then they had a fly leaf that only covered half the page and had some other advertising on it, but it also had the butterfly as it appeared when you imaged it with ultraviolet light. It's not necessarily how the butterflies appeared to one another. That's, I think, nicely demonstrated in an image that's on Ask a Biologist site that you can go and look at that nicely shows the appearance of a butterfly to another butterfly as a combination of the ultraviolet and the other wavelengths of light reflected off of the wing and not just the ultraviolet wavelengths, which is what is often shown in those ultraviolet images.
Right. It's the combination of the two.
Yes.
Very good. How about any simple experiment you might have or suggestion for a young scientist that might want to go out and learn more about butterflies?
Well, I don't know about an experiment, but I certainly can think of an observation. You know, butterflies are, there's a lot of them. There's not only a lot of them in numbers, but there's also a lot of different kinds. There's some people say there's as many as 20,000 different species of butterflies that occur around the world. One of the questions that I think is fun to get at is the question is, well, which ones are in my backyard? That obviously is going to change a lot depending on the time of the year, depending on where you live. I live in the desert, and on almost any day that's warm enough out there in my backyard, I can see a butterfly or two. And during the summer, I can see quite a few butterflies. And the exactly how many there are, exactly what species are out there, what different kinds, varies from one time of year to the next. And so one of the things I've done over the last few years is I keep a notebook. It's near my back door, basically, or a journal. And when I see interesting butterflies and things, I write them down in there. Often maybe write down something about what they were doing or what time of day I saw them. I write down which species I saw. That's a challenging thing in and of itself, trying to identify what the species are. And there are lots of books, field guides to help with that, as well as a lot of online resources. There's a really excellent Butterflies of North America website that has a lot of good information. Actually, they put out a website. They pull out the different species for each state. So you can actually get a, for me, I can get a list of all the butterflies of Arizona.
Perfect.
And you can do that for other states. So that's sort of a fun thing just to learn more about the natural history that's in your backyard, which can be very interesting and compelling.
Well, there are actually butterfly gardens.
Right. Many cities now throughout the United States have two sorts of things that are interesting to people who want to learn more about butterflies. One is butterfly gardens. Now, here we have butterfly gardens that are most effective at attracting lots of butterflies in the spring and summer, as in most places. In many colder climates, it would be only during the summer when you would see them at all. But those are great places to go, and they attract the butterflies by doing two things: planting plants that have flowers that produce lots of nectar, and also planting plants that the caterpillars feed on, and so females lay eggs on those plants. So when you go to these butterfly gardens, you make observations. You can even videotape them. You can write down observations on what flowers you see the butterflies feeding at, which species are feeding at which flowers. You can also look, and you may be lucky enough to see a female actually ovipositing on one of the plants and see
laying eggs.
Laying eggs, right? Yeah, yeah, laying eggs on one of the plants, and then it's fun to see a female. You can see them curl their abdomen out to touch the leaf, and then they'll fly off, and you can run over, and if you look at that leaf, very often you'll be able to see that little tiny butterfly egg that's been deposited there. But I just wanted to say also that many cities now throughout, especially the southern U.S., but there are even some in the northern U.S., have these butterfly houses or butterfly pavilions, which are walk-through facilities with lots of plants where they have live butterflies. And I'll never forget once I was in New York City in December. We went to the American Museum of Natural History, and I was just stunned to walk in there and find out that they had put up inside the American Museum of Natural History in the middle of winter a butterfly house, a walk-through butterfly facility that was just full of all different species of tropical butterflies.
Absolutely marvelous.
Yeah.
You've been listening to an interview with Professor Ron Rutowski. This is part two of a three-part series. Please join me for part three of the series. We'll be learning about Professor Rutowski's other life and music, and also listen to one of the songs from his solo album called Violin Alone. I'm Dr. Biology.